I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Jonathan Johnson.
On this Who's Had a Good International Break and Who Hasn't edition, the French reaction to the national team's loss against Germany. Ooh la la, wasn't it supposed to be the other way round? Also, could this be Portugal's Euros, or is that a dark horse too far for the final furlong? And we're looking ahead to Le Classique as football goes domestic again, and a revamped Marseille take on the same old PSG, more or less. Will it be a classic? JJ, you're in the place to be. So it is probably best to start with you and get a reaction in France to the loss against Germany, not to talk of that 7-second goal.
Yeah, absolutely. A bit of a surprise result, but also quite amusing because France have had this incredible calendar year in 2023 where they were unbeatable, bar a friendly against Germany. And then they start 2024 sort of seen as the favourites to not only win the Euros in Germany this summer, but also to take gold medal on home soil in the Olympics as well. And they lose to Germany again with a goal pretty much at the beginning of either half. So, yeah, it's... obviously, a bit of a setback for the French, one that they weren't maybe expecting. I don't think they were expecting the team to be so flat. I don't think they're panicking too much at the moment. But also, you listen to sort of what Didier Deschamps and some of the players were saying after the game. And it is something that they feel that they really need to learn from ahead of this summer's tournament. Because we remember the last time France went into a Euro competition, they were seen as the favourites and suffered an unexpectedly early exit.
Although, Andy, if they're going to learn from anything, they've got to learn from, you know, knowing what a defence is supposed to be against Germany. Did Germany get lucky? Did they find France on an off day or not?
Well, I think it was, if we're talking about the 7-second goal, Dotton, it was definitely a plan. And not just presumably because they'd been watching Slovakia versus Austria earlier in the day where Christoph Baumgartner scored an even earlier goal, of course, than Florian Wirtz's one. But I do think the defensive question is a really good one, because when you look at England and France as the favourites for Euro 2024, they have similar issues, as well as there being a similar mood around the two nations, at least on home soil, around these friendlies. That sense of, we were expecting a little bit more. Aren't we meant to be the favourites? Wasn't this meant to be a victory lap before we head towards glory when it comes to June? I think it's interesting that, the two teams do have quite similar issues on the pitch. So defensively, France have got a problem. I think you look at not just getting punked by Florian Wirtz, but that's symptomatic of something else. Like the fact that in the last seven games, the only clean sheet they've kept against anyone was against Gibraltar when they beat them 14-0 and Gibraltar played with 10 men for a lot of the game. So that's a real concern. For sure, and they've conceded, as JJ was saying, four goals in those two games against Germany. But I guess from an English perspective, there will be Arsenal fans listening to this now going, why aren't they picking William Saliba, who's the best French centre-back out there? And he did make a big contribution towards the end of the game against Chile, that they won in Marseille on Tuesday, which again wasn't a massively convincing performance, particularly in a defensive sense, and they could have conceded more goals in that. But you know, Chile could have had an equaliser in the closing stages, but Saliba slid in and made a great challenge on Ben Brereton Diaz to stop him getting an equaliser towards the end there. I mean, when we talk about France's defence, JJ, obviously we can talk about it globally, but in an individual sense, if we look at Saliba and if we look at Dayo Upamecano, who, if you like, is really France's Harry Maguire. You know, we know he's a good player, but he's in a bit of a hole at the moment in terms of his form, and he's not been good for Bayern this season. You get, I guess, again, if we're going to go back to similarities between England and France, Didier Deschamps and Gareth Southgate, and I suppose a lot of international coaches can be inherently quite conservative, lean towards loyalty for players that they know. How much of a problem is Upamecano, and is there any chance of Saliba supplanting him in the starting 11 for the start of the tournament?
I mean, it's a really good talking point. I mean, I think one thing that's really contributed towards this almost crisis of faith that Didier Deschamps has defensively with France since the 2022 World Cup relates to the fact that Raphael Varane took early international retirement. Sort of, if he was still around, he would by far and away be the most senior figure in that defence and would probably be a natural starter if fit as one of the two central defensive figures. But actually, the Saliba situation reminds me a bit of what happened with Aymeric Laporte. Now, a lot of people sort of read into Didier Deschamps' comments of him saying sort of Saliba does things that he doesn't particularly like or appreciate. That doesn't necessarily mean that his performances are not good on the pitch. What Deschamps has when it comes to each big international tournament is this additional pressure and challenge with France, where he can't just pick the most talented names and put them all together, because history tells us that there will be issues sort of within the chemistry of that squad. Didier Deschamps likes to pick a squad that's built in order to have success on the pitch, and that may well end up including Saliba, but the balance has to be right. And the reason why Laporte ended up going for Spain over France was Deschamps' reluctance to give him the same importance at international level that he enjoyed at club level. And a lot of that was actually related to what Didier Deschamps knew about Laporte away from the pitch, what he'd seen from him in terms of his leadership or lack of leadership that Deschamps considered from his time with the under 21 team, where Laporte felt that he should have been at senior level much sooner than he was. And also, I think it's probably linked to, in part as well, to the fact that Deschamps and Laporte come from the same place. So it's quite easy to know sort of via the families and the gossip in the region sort of what Laporte was like away from the pitch and maybe how he was seeing his situation within the France setup. But I think with Saliba, it's, you know, perhaps Deschamps feels like he's laid down the challenge, thrown down the gauntlet to Saliba to impress him, and he's waiting to see a bit more from him. Because at this moment in time, in terms of Deschamps' set central defensive unit going into Euro 2024, it's still rather open. You know, you can't be sure of the fitness of Konate. Upamecano's form, as we've already established, is very, very iffy. And Saliba, in terms of his club performances, is arguably the outstanding candidate. But is that enough for him to sort of make a jump into the starting 11 just in time for Euro 2024. Time will tell. There is a possibility because we've seen Deschamps sort of use the preparation matches and then the first match of a major tournament to decide, right, these guys are ready, these guys are not. You know, we saw Benjamin Pavard start the 2022 World Cup and then barely feature after that. So it is possible that somebody comes off of sort of a substitute or reserve role. So maybe Saliba comes into the 11 at the expense of somebody else. But I think for me, I see a lot of parallels between the situation that we saw a few years ago with Aymeric Laporte and William Saliba at the moment.
Well, another great talking point is the absence of Antoine Griezmann. He's featured in 84 of his country's last games before this international break. He's injured now. I wonder how much of an absence he is to the French team, Andy, particularly when you consider both defence and attack. They weren't brilliant going forward either, or at least they weren't effective going forward. And he clearly is a key figure. Did they miss him? Do we have to put it down to him not being there as well?
I think it's a massive part of it, Dotton. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And there's just no player who can do what he does, possibly even in world football, because you're not just talking about the craft, you're talking about the energy that he brings. If there's a good thing to be taken for France from this international window, though, I would say the fact that Griezmann, a player who, even if you compare him like physically in terms of like consistent availability and output, if you were to compare him to like prime Kane, Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, any of those players who hate to rest, he's up there with them. You know, you can look at the amount of games and he plays for Atletico and as you say, for the France national team. So I just wonder if this little injury that he picked up against Inter, as long as it doesn't prove to be a lingering problem, is it, JJ, actually an advantage for France? Because he's not a man you can ever make rest. So he's been made to rest. And he's not a player who can ever coast through games, is he? You know, he covers every single blade of grass. And that's a double-edged sword, isn't it, as you get into your 30s? Because ultimately, you have to pay the bill for that somewhere down the line. They'd rather him not pay the bill for that before or during the Euros.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting observation because it brings me back to sort of the situation he was in for the 2022 World Cup, where he'd returned to Atletico Madrid, but there was the sort of, not confusion, but there was the very specific framework of the nature of his return from Barcelona, which meant that Atleti really had to manage his minutes, and he was sort of barely playing compared to the indispensable role that he has now, which basically sees him playing every single minute. And the result of that for France was that he was much fresher and he was able to grow into the tournament a lot more. And I think that is something that Didier Deschamps will certainly hope sort of rubs in Les Bleus' favour, you know, for this summer, that, you know, Griezmann perhaps isn't run into the ground between now and the end of the season. Obviously, a big shot for them to go far in the Champions League as well, given the draw that they've received. But I think, you know, the really interesting thing about that Germany game was that you've got two very, very talented players in Griezmann and Toni Kroos, who can essentially be the glue to their teams. And we saw that putting Kroos into that Germany team sort of added the glue that they've maybe been missing since his retirement. Yet when you took Griezmann out, that's like taking the glue out of the situation, and suddenly the team was a lot less cohesive, you know, and what they were trying to do on the pitch didn't make as much sense. Now, the threat for Griezmann as well is not just necessarily with regards to Euro 2024 this summer. We already know that Thierry Henry has him very high on his list of priority targets to potentially turn out for France in the Olympics in Paris later this summer as well. That is going to be a massive challenge for Griezmann and his physique, sort of in, you know, in sort of relation to the question that we're asking at this moment in time about whether Griezmann can remain crucial to Didier Deschamps' France, you know, but also, you know, continue to perform at the very highest level for Atleti and Les Bleus as well.
JJ, actually, while you're on that with the France Olympic team, has Thierry Henry got a bit of an issue here? Because obviously Real Madrid have already come out and say you can't have any of our players for the Olympics. And now you've got Florian Maurice at Rennes going, look, we're not going to stuff up our next season just so you can play players for the Olympics. So, you know, you have the possibility of other players who might have come in, like Kalimuendo, Terrier, that sort of second or third line of players. Is this a bit of a potential problem for France in the Olympics and a problem for Thierry Henry?
I think it is going to be very, very tricky. And we've seen it be difficult for France as well. You know, when it was the Tokyo Olympics, you know, France received massive amounts of rejections from clubs allowing their players to leave. And that's why you had the sort of eclectic mix that France ended up with going to that tournament, where you had the very overdue Teji Savanier international debut. You had Gignac making his return because, you know, they were allowed to, you know, to have that that moment with the national team by their clubs. Obviously, Gignac, you know, outside of Europe, so it was a bit less complicated for him. But Savanier, you know, for Montpellier to have him getting international recognition was fantastic. But it is going to be very, very tricky for Thierry Henry, because the players outside of France, the Olympics doesn't have the same value, it doesn't have the same allure, you know, to these foreign clubs. You know, they won't understand why, you know, many of these French players might want to take part in the Olympics on home soil for them. So I think a lot of pressure is going to be applied on the domestic teams, particularly those, you know, closest geographically to Paris, because obviously the, you know, being the Paris Olympics as well, right on the doorstep. That was kind of where I think a lot of the thinking in Kylian Mbappe taking part in it, you know, factored in when we thought about his contract extension and it was supposed to go beyond the summer of 2024. And obviously that's now become an extremely contentious issue, you know, in this sort of protracted move ahead of this summer to Real Madrid. So it is going to be hugely difficult for Thierry Henry, you know, to construct the kind of team that he wants. And it could be, you know, that he ends up having to go to some of the players who have retired from international duty, but were sort of in regular internationals up until quite recently. So the likes of, you know, Loris, Varane, who I mentioned earlier. I'm not saying that those guys will necessarily sort of come out of international retirement to participate, but it might actually be easier for Henry to target them than some of the key players, either domestically playing in Ligue 1, you know, or some of the star names playing abroad.
Yeah, although when you look at the France-Germany game, you know, from a German perspective, they must be thinking, my word, what has Nagelsmann done? Because before this match, before Germany beat France 2-0, well, many people were writing Germany off for the Euros, weren't they, Andy? And now they seem to have turned something around. Is it down to Nagelsmann?
He's clearly had an influence, and I think you can see that by the fact that the DFB, the German FA, are already trying to persuade him to extend his contract, which of course expires at the end of the Euros. Now, he's got a decision to make before we get to Germany and what they are on the pitch. And I guess a lot of clubs out there have got a decision to make at maybe an earlier stage than they would like to, because he's in discussion, so clearly he hasn't ruled out the possibility of staying. But he is a guy who's in his mid-30s who really wants to be in the club game still. So there are maybe Premier League clubs who, if they want to make a run for him, they can't hang about. There's a question maybe at Borussia Dortmund. If they're going to get rid of Edin Terzic, would they like Julian Nagelsmann? Well, I think ideally they probably would. So do they make a run for him now? I mean, for them, it's a lot more delicate, of course, because they're in still in the Champions League and, of course, in a real battle for fourth place with Leipzig. But in terms of what Nagelsmann's doing, in terms of enhancing his reputation, we don't expect magic from him overnight, because Germany have been in a bad place for a number of years now. So for him to already apply his identity to this team, which he did, and I think you look at the two number 10s that played against France, just behind Kai Havertz, who is very much his type of centre-forward, by the way. And if I had to bet on a centre-forward starting for the Euros at this point, I would bet on Kai Havertz, because he's very much Nagelsmann's cup of tea. But the two number 10s, Florian Wirtz, who scored that brilliant opening goal, and Jamal Musiala, putting your two creative players in the best position to flourish, I think is hugely important. Pulling rank with Joshua Kimmich and saying, look, I don't care if you want to play in midfield. We need you at right back. You're playing at right back. I think that is very important as well. Defensively, they looked a lot more solid, and Rudiger had a couple of good games, I thought, against France and against the Netherlands in the game at Frankfurt that they won on Tuesday. But having said that, he wanted something different out of this international break than the rest of the coaches wanted. I think if you looked at like a lot of the other big nations, there's a sense of, right, okay, can we try and iron out a few kinks that we have? Can we maintain freshness? All that sort of stuff. What might work for us in an emergency? You can definitely see that with the things that England and France tried out. But with Germany, the job's completely different, isn't it, JJ? It's about restoring public confidence, because no one believes really inside Germany that Germany can actually go and win the Euros. And so the fact that he picked the same team for both of these games and the importance of them winning them, I mean, we can sit here and go, well, okay, France's two results, they don't really matter per se, do they? You know, it's nice to win, but they don't really matter. Whereas for Germany, I think winning these two games really did matter.
I largely agree with what Andy said, and I feel that it is important to bear in mind that this is going to be a Euro competition on home soil, because it reminds me of the Germany World Cup back in 2006, when it was a completely revamped German side, and sort of the advent for them of playing in front of home support, being on home soil, was a massive part of them having unexpected success, going much further than people expected, and essentially rejuvenating the German national team. I found some of the players as well that Nagelsmann left out of the most recent international squad quite interesting, given that they're were predecessors who also tried to move on from some of those names, and then sort of bowed to peer pressure and brought them back. And then sort of in getting rid of them again, suddenly the German national team seems to have a bit of vim and vigor. But going back to my earlier point, I do feel like the Toni Kroos coming out of international retirement is potentially huge for Germany, because as much as the tactical setup from Nagelsmann, is very interesting and certainly plays to their strengths within the players that Nagelsmann wants to select, having a player of Toni Kroos's caliber, his technical brilliance is that is a huge game changer for Germany, and one that Nagelsmann wasn't certain to have at the beginning of his tenure as Germany national team coach.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, we've been talking about the coaches. The closer we get to these summer tournaments, the more perhaps the coaches take prominence. Didier Deschamps, we've talked about. Julian Nagelsmann, we've been talking about now. But there's one coach that seems to have crept up under the radar, or perhaps I'm mistaken. If you're looking at it from a Portuguese perspective, Andy, it probably isn't under the radar. But Roberto Martinez, yes, him, seems to have given Portugal a fighting chance in the Euros coming up.
Yeah, I think maybe he has. I don't think you can quite put them in the bracket of very top favourites. We were talking about England and France earlier, yeah. But the talent is undoubted. And Martinez has done a really great job so far. So the friendly they lost against Slovenia on Tuesday, first defeat since he's taken charge. He won all the games in the qualifying campaign. And considering what a meal some very good Portugal sides have made of qualifying for major tournaments before, I think that is significant. I think it's worth underlining. I think he's handled the players very skillfully as well. And I think there are two things with Martinez that we can kind of underrate. I think tactically, he's far smarter than a lot of people give him credit for. And I think when we've seen him with a very good Belgian squad and now a very good Portuguese squad, they're the best sets of players he's worked with in his career. So I think they're maybe able to carry out his instructions a little bit better. I mean, I've referred to this before, but I always think of the 2018 World Cup quarterfinal against Brazil, in which he just played an absolute blinder. They were brilliant in that, and it was his fingerprints all over it. I think he's always, because he's had a quite good but not absolutely flawless club coaching career, and because he didn't have an extremely storied playing career as well, I think people can be a little bit underwhelmed when he takes charge. Certainly the Belgian public were, and the Portuguese public were as well. I think what you can underrate about Martinez is not just his tactical chops, but in terms of him as a person, he's really good at connecting with people. And so obviously we think about the way that he connects with the players, the way that he manages the players on a human level, which is very, very skillful indeed. But he's just really charming. And I think that's really important in terms of getting the public on side.
Although, JJ, he has problems that perhaps Didier Deschamps has as well, which is you've got a lot of talent. You've got a lot of talent on the field. With Roberto Martinez, you know, the two friendlies they played, it was a different Portugal virtually each game. They had eight players that played one match and didn't play the other match. And it feels like sometimes you can wish, or your wishes can come true a little bit too literally. And you end up having to sort of make the choices that are going to end up, you know, peeing some players off, let's face it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Martinez has some very, very big characters in that Portugal squad. I mean, we saw sort of the disadvantage of having somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo towards the end of his career still playing internationally and expecting to be
He's
the
still
key man,
playing
at the most recent World Cup.
Don't
yeah, of course
talk
he
about
is.
Towards the end of his career until he's done, mate.
No, I know, but you know, when we last saw him at a major international tournament, it wasn't the best moment of his career, and there was you know, a lot of questioning of Cristiano Ronaldo and whether he really should have been starting for Portugal at that moment. It was part of a very difficult international tournament, which ultimately saw you know, the change in management that has brought Martinez in. You know, but I think sort of, it's going to be very interesting to see how he deals with that dynamic, especially if Ronaldo is not, you know, sort of at the level that maybe you would expect him to be now that he's playing regularly. For the moment, it seems to be fine. But you've got two very interesting characters in this squad, because you've got an absolute heap of talent, you know, across most positions. But then you've got the established stalwarts who are, you would imagine, are the first two names on the team sheet in Ronaldo and Pepe, who, you know, just almost, I mean, I would say they're evergreen, but it's such an overused cliche. They're just, yeah, they seem to go on forever. And it's, you know, you do feel like you wonder if Martinez, you know, might benefit from there perhaps being some sort of question marks about them physically going into the tournament, despite sort of being in this incredible, you know, shape for guys sort of in and around their 40s. I mean, I think their combined age, just the two of them, is, you know, close to 100, which, yeah, is crazy when you get rid of. No comments about our combined age, the three of us.
I was thinking more about mine, but there you go.
No, but it's honestly sort of what Martinez does and sort of how he uses their experience. Because at the end of the day, that experience, especially in these big international tournaments, is absolutely invaluable. You know, and with Pepe as well, it's what you could always term as sort of very, very good leadership. He's the kind of guy that you absolutely want to go into one of these major international tournaments alongside. He's been there, done that, seen it all. You know, despite some of the talent that's coming through in that position, it still makes sense for Martinez to place faith in him, you know, sort of being the rock at the heart of that defense, as it makes sense at this moment in time, given, you know, his peak physical form to still have Ronaldo as the captain and talisman of this team, whereas it didn't at the most recent World Cup.
It's a funny thing, isn't it, that Pepe, despite being a bit older than Cristiano Ronaldo and being 41, you'd rather be him in terms of physical Nick, wouldn't you? Like, he's closer to his peak version of himself than Ronaldo is. You know, that's not to diminish Ronaldo or where he's at the moment. I think we can all agree that he's not at his absolute peak. Maybe you could argue it's easier for a defender, a central defender, to be that. But, you know, Pepe is going to be absolutely key for them. I don't think there's any doubt about that, even though Ruben Dias has been growing into a leader for a very long time. And I think that's a real advantage for Portugal, the fact that they do have these leaders all over the pitch. I guess the interesting thing is, you think as Ronaldo starts to become less the leader, and he is less the leader, you know, I think if you go back even a couple of years, it's like heresy to say it's not Ronaldo plus 10 more, if you're talking about it in Portugal. But now, not only the public, not only the media, but the players actually say, well, yeah, we can't expect him to do everything. I don't think in all the time I was covering Portugal at major tournaments, I don't think I ever sat through a press conference where one of the Portuguese players, the Portuguese player speaking, didn't go, "O melhor do mundo," he's the best in the world. It's like you're obliged to say it. It was like a religious mantra, whereas now that's less the case. Now, you assumed once we got past that bit where it was unequivocally Cristiano's team, that you would get to a point where it was Bruno Fernandes' team. And there were hints of that at Euro 2020, for example. There were hints of that. There are definitely hints of that, more than hints of that, at the 2022 World Cup. But I think the way you look at it now is, it may be Bernardo Silva's team. I think because he is the player that they really can't do without, who is technically and physically on point, who's playing in the best club team in the world, who can influence the game from so many different positions. He even played defensive midfield for a bit in the World Cup in 2022, and did a brilliant job, because he does a brilliant job at everything. But I think when we talk about that balance of talent that you were talking about before, Dotnan, how do you not piss the players off? Well, I think the way that Martinez treats them, that's why he's got such a difficult job. And when he was taking over the job, like, the way everyone looked at it is, well, okay, it's his job to phase out Cristiano Ronaldo. Good luck with that, because you're going to be the bloke who shot Bambi. And it's really tough to do that. It's like an absolute political minefield. But the way he's dealt with that, and the way he dealt with, you talked about the eight changes between the two friendlies against Sweden, which they won 5-2, and the game that they lost in Slovenia. It wasn't just that he made the changes. It's that he said before the first game, before the Sweden game, okay, so there are some players who are going to be available for both games. And then there are eight players who are just going to be involved in the Sweden game. and I'm going to replace them with another eight players in the squad who are just going to play Slovenia. So eight for just Sweden, eight for just Slovenia. And those were big players. You look at the players that went after the Sweden game, and in which I played very well. So Bruno Fernandes went, Bernardo went, Ruben Dias went, Rafael Leao, Polina, etc. And then they brought in, afterwards, they brought in João Félix, Ronaldo, etc., etc. And so it wasn't a reaction to, oh, you played well against Sweden, so we're going to give you guys a few days off. It wasn't like that. It's like, I understand you as a player that you are at a crucial point in the season, and whereas this is vital for me, it's maybe a bit of a pain in the ass for you. So why don't you just have a little bit of a break? And I can't imagine anything that would make a player more feel, you see me and you see what's going on for me and you see what I need at this moment. And when I talked about Martinez being able to connect with players, I think that's really, really important. So when it gets to a tournament, they're going to be giving absolutely everything for him, as they have done throughout this qualifying campaign, in which they've been really good.
JJ, Spain's La Liga has its El Clásico. All the French had to do was swap the letters around from the definitive article and they'd have got Le Clásico. But they've gone a little bit Frenchy and fancy with their equivalent, haven't they?
They have Le Classique, and yeah, it's you know, it's got an unexpected amount of needle to it now as well, given what happened to Kylian Mbappe in Marseille just a couple of days ago with the French national team. So obviously we know France beat Chile, but Mbappe roundly booed, as you would expect by the Marseille public, and yeah, he's coming back for more this weekend because of course it is Marseille versus PSG, a decimated Marseille, I might add, up against a PSG who are, you know, very comfortable atop the Ligue 1 table, into the latter stage of the Champions League, as well as the Coupe de France as well. So things going very much according to plan for Luis Enrique at this moment in time. And yeah, there's going to be massive expectation and pressure on Mbappe. I mean, that kind of treatment that we saw with the French national team when he's in a PSG shirt, that's par for the course. You expect that. But I think many people were surprised by sort of the vitriol that he was shown at Stade Vélodrome, while with the national team, obviously, because without having that PSG affiliation. But yeah, this one is very much stacking up in PSG and Mbappe's favour. And there's so many absentees on the Marseille side of things that I'm going to throw a little gem Andy's way. And I don't know if you recall Stéphane Sparagna. So once upon a time, one of Marseille's major hopes. So basically his career has not gone according to plan since he moved on from Marseille sort of 7 years ago or so. But he made the very interesting decision back at the beginning of 2024 to leave Aubagne, who are top of their league in the fourth tier, so like a kind of local team not too far away from Marseille, and return to OM, not to play for the first team, but to play for the reserves. Now, because of the injury crisis that Marseille are suffering, and Jean-Louis Gasset is scrambling to get together a team for his big return to facing PSG as well, and he's now going to have to turn to Stéphane Sparagna. So once fabled as sort of, you know, the next big thing to come through Marseille's youth academy, he's now going to be forced into action despite being part of the reserve squad, just solely because Marseille are struggling to get together the numbers at this moment in time.
Well, given that, Andy, is this still a classic if Marseille are fielding reserves?
It's disappointing, I have to say, because Marseille have been in really good form since Jean-Louis Gasset has taken charge. And JJ and I talked about it at the time, and he said very wisely that it seems like really left field, but there's a reason to it. As I think we touched on before, the fact that he's someone who is responsible for coaching some really good teams. He's responsible for a lot of Laurent Blanc's best work, if we're being completely honest, because he sorted the tactics for Laurent Blanc's excellent PSG team that's very, very underrated, by the way, if people look back at that historically. And he's just brought a bit of calm to the situation. I know a lot of Marseille fans have thought, they've gone for the names, certainly with Gattuso, rather than a coach who's necessarily suited to the situation. I do think they have a weaker squad this year than last year. And obviously those injuries have kind of exposed that. But I think if you look over the last little while, Aubameyang has been great in the last couple of months. He's been really, really good. And it kind of felt at the start of the season that he wasn't able to energize the team in the same way that Alexis Sanchez did. So it's not really about the goals. It's about that ability to get that incredible crowd at the Velodrome behind you. And he's putting in the biggest shift that he's put in since his St. Etienne days, really. I think in terms of his all-round participation in the game, which, given he's 34 years old, is pretty remarkable. Obviously, JJ, I'm hoping for a miracle from Spadagna, who, lest we forget, was a big favourite of Marcelo Bielsa, if we go back a little while as well. Is Fabrice Apruessa still available to play? Talking of stars from the second team who end up in the Marseille first team.
Oh, there's there's quite a few of them as well. I think I recall Baptiste Eloy as well at the time. I think that was actually one of the central defensive pairings. So I don't know. Maybe Gasset needs to give them a call and sort of delve into Marcelo Bielsa's old phone book if it's been left knocking around the
the only reason you room. Haven't the only reason you haven't had the call is because you're Parisian. I think is the
exactly
point.
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't ever bring myself to do that. But no, just on your point as well about Gasset, I think the thing that people underestimate about Gasset, and yes, obviously it was hugely disappointing with the Ivory Coast to be fired mid-tournament as the coach of the host nation, and then to see that host nation then go on and win the Africa Cup of Nations. But also, Gasset is he's very much the old school manager. For want of a better phrase, he doesn't take any shit from anybody, and he earns a lot of respect from the players for that. And I think it speaks volumes when you look at the respect with which someone like Zlatan Ibrahimovic spoke about Gasset after his time in Paris, and sort of the outpouring of emotion from some of those really established star names at a very difficult time in Jean-Louis Gasset's life as well, when he lost his wife to illness. I think that speaks volumes about the connections that he has on a human level with those players. And he just strips things back to the absolute basics. And that is why you've suddenly seen this Marseille team go from hopeless to hopefuls, European hopefuls. They're enjoying a good run in the Europa League as well at the moment, despite pushing things very, very close to catastrophe away at Villarreal a couple of weeks ago in the second leg of that round of 16 clash. So, it's unfortunate the timing of this game, because there has been a lot of really good positive momentum building up for OM, but it does feel like pure logic is probably going to win out here, and this could get quite brutal for Marseille unless there's perhaps a miraculous turnaround in fitness in the couple of days leading up to the game.
I guess that's it, JJ. Do you sort of maybe hedge and think, well, there are a lot of games to go after this? There's another eight games to go after this, because Marseille, they're still just about in with a chance of Champions League. I mean, it's not likely, but it's possible, especially when you bear in mind that it's top four. I mean, do you think they can quite get to that point, or are they kind of victims with that dip that they had in autumn of the fact that, a bit like Ligue 1 last season, there's more good teams than you think in the top seven or eight? For me, it feels like the battle for those European places is extremely competitive this season, just as it was last season, because you've got Marseille and Rennes round about seventh, eighth place at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Competition is stronger than ever. And I think as well, something that is a real game changer for Marseille now is being at the point that they're in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. Marseille are one of traditionally France's strongest clubs on the continental scene. And to have them this close to a potential European final, it's almost the moment of the season now, especially perhaps, if the result is maybe as brutal as we're sort of expecting, given the lack of personnel. if this is maybe the moment where Jean-Louis Gasset and his Marseille squad sort of change their focus and sort of see what they can salvage in the league, see if they can stay sort of competitive in and around the European positions, but give everything now to that Europa League run and potentially, you know, try to go all the way and win it and, you know, bring back France's second piece of major European silverware, because it's long overdue and the performance of Ligue 1 clubs across the board has been impressive this year, sort of the way that they've won the coefficient, the fifth place in the coefficient back from the Netherlands. And they're also, you know, highly ranked at the moment in terms of the extra Champions League place, even though they probably won't finish on top of that. And I think, you know, to have Marseille potentially going to at least the semi-finals, if not the final, that would be a huge statement for French football and perhaps for the future of OM, because there are, you know, perpetual rumours as well, you know, of a potential sale that would see, you know, Frank McCourt replaced at the top of the club and potentially a new and more ambitious project come in. And it does kind of feel like it's maybe their best route now to the Champions League, potentially going all the way in the Europa League.
Donk, you see what I did there. We always ask you guys at this point in proceedings to recommend a game of the week, and I'm assuming then, JJ, that Le Classique would be your game of the week, would it?
I mean, normally it would be my game of the week, but this week is unlike any other. And on Friday, we have the Northern Derby between Lille and Lens. And for Lille. Me, that is Lille. Indeed.
That's Lille.
My beloved Aston Villa's future Europa Conference League opponents. I'll be looking forward to going north for that game in a couple of weeks' time, which, funnily enough, was one of my first European games, actually, at Villa Park. Villa versus Lille in the Intertoto Lille. Cup. So, yeah, Lille. It's just easier to say LOSC. But yeah, so you've got Lille versus Lens in the Northern Derby, and that is always a very much a blood and thunder affair. You know, fun fact as well that you can have molten chocolate slag heaps to eat when you go up north and visit Lens. So that's definitely sort of my top tip to while you're watching the game to definitely get one of those between your chops. But no, this game is one of the most important on the French domestic calendar, and I'm very much looking forward to it, especially now you've got a bit of a tussle, you know, for some of those European places that we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you know, that features the likes of Lens and Lille. Lille.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup. Andy, clearly we're going to need to eat something healthier after all that chocolate. What would you recommend?
You think? Oh, I'm just about to disappoint you. Well, look, you've mentioned El Clasico, Le Classique. What about the Classica? I think club football's back with a bang, partly because of that. You look at some of the games that there are in the club game all over Europe this weekend, and it's going to be a really great weekend to get back into club football. Bayern versus Dortmund, Saturday night, 5:30, the top spiel, of course, the top game. So 5:30 p.m. UK time. And you won't need me to tell you, OTC fans, that they always make a mess of this game, Dortmund. It doesn't really matter where the two teams are at. They always make a mess of it. And so I sort of cling to the memory of Jurgen Klopp's incredible young Dortmund going there and winning in 2011 on their way to their first title under him, when Louis van Gaal was still the Bayern coach, and we were all still watching football in standard definition, those sort of times. But look, Dortmund really need to go there and actually show some guts and get a result. So can they take advantage of Bayern, who, let's face it, aren't going to win the league? Maybe holding a little bit back, because the Champions League has to be the full focus for Bayern. I'm sure Dortmund will find a way to make a mess of it, but that they really need the points in this battle with Leipzig. I think if we're going to eat something before this, and it has to be before this because it's way too heavy to eat after it at what, nearly 9 p.m. local time, you want to get yourself some Schweinshaxe, which is pork knuckle. Very, very fulsome meal, which I had on my last trip to Munich. Last but one trip to Munich, if memory serves. The thing is, where we are now, it's not only a crucial point of the season, we're nearly in April, so I don't think you can leave it much later to have Schweinshaxe, or you're going to get hella meat sweats. So, you know, let's bear that in mind. Let's get the last Schweinshaxer of the spring done and then go for something a little bit lighter from next week.
I would have thought, given that they're going to make a mess of it, you'd have gone for the Eton mess. You know, strawberries and cream. Strawberries and cream, everybody.
Well, maybe that's afterwards. I didn't say you couldn't have pudding.
Good point. Very good point. Thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure that you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.